Worshipful brethren, brethren all, welcome to Freemasonry in 7 minutes or less.
In this episode, we'll be discussing conducting Masonic research. As Brother Earnshaw once said, paraphrasing Churchill, the puzzle of Freemasonry is a riddle wrapped in mystery inside an enigma. It's meant to be confusing. That's kind of the point. One of the strongest emotions I felt when joining the Lodge was the need to understand the history of the fraternity. I felt like I had to discover the history of the fraternity, the meanings of the symbols, and I felt an overwhelming desire to do my own research. The first thing that you will discover when you do so is the lack of any authorized history of Freemasonry or a go-to bullet-pointed list of documents to peruse at your own leisure. It doesn't exist, unfortunately. You have to make your own, and this is the part of the magic of being a speculative Mason, is you have to become your own Sherlock Holmes. There are many great books out there that will start you off down the path, but there comes a time when you have to start walking your path by yourself. So how do you go about doing so? One of the great things about the Lodge is that nearly everybody there is doing the same thing. The exchange of ideas and knowledge I have found to be the strongest mortar binding the Lodge together. Every person has their own unique contribution, and together you can make great strides forward. When you read reputable books on Freemasonry, because God knows there's a million and one disreputable ones, one of the first things you notice is the amount of original documents and manuscripts referred to, which you wouldn't have heard of prior to reading the book. As we have a Lodge mentor and Freemasonic author to hand, Brother Earnshaw, please can you enlighten us on how you collated all of your reference documents and how you conducted your own Masonic research? What could a newbie do to in the field of research to start off on the right or left foot? Where do you go to for your documents? And who or where do you contact?
Yes, so... Well, I mean, my research is now 4 books, and it's based on an experience I had in a Taoist temple, which I realized had an initiation which was exactly the same as the first degree of Freemasonry. And that set me off. So I had lots of ideas and leads. But I think one of the things I found is the internet, of course, is just really a wonderful trove and kind of asset base for us. I use Google Books a lot. So I put a phrase in and then I would search for the book. And then so a lot of the books are not available for viewing on Google. They're kind of like limited access, but many of the older books are available. And when you put a search word into Google, just that phrase will show up inside the book. It'll open exactly the right page. So you can read before and after the phrase and get that. You don't have to read all the book, you just read 5-10 pages. If it gets interesting, you'd read more. That's one of the first ways I did research. Second way was through inspiration, and to me that was very, very powerful. I know people like Einstein say the same thing. He would study a problem for many hours, perhaps many days, then he'd put it aside and go for a walk in the park. And while he was there or on his return or even when he's having lunch, it would suddenly pop into his head exactly what he was thinking about. And I use that system for myself. I would read deeply on a certain subject that I wasn't familiar with, or I thought there was something there that was important for me. And I would read and read and I put it aside and then forget about it. And it would come to me, and normally it would actually come to me 3 o'clock in the morning, which was a little bit annoying. So I bought an IC recorder and put it beside my bed because I didn't want to lose anything. But that happened a lot, 3 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning.
I understand that. Yep. Yeah, it's quite funny when you listen back to anything you do record. Let's say you use your phone, and it almost sounds like a bizarre psychedelic dream when you describe what you're talking about. Yes.
But it's worse than trying to read my handwriting at 3 a.m.
True.
I can't make head nor tail of that. So that's why I gave up writing notes and recording them instead. So that's, I think, probably the two main ways for my research. I find that research leads to another thing. And then when you study a subject in depth, then you start to see the minutiae, little things that stand out. And I've prepared another paper on the peculiar system of morality, which we'll record later. But we keep saying peculiar Freemasonry is a peculiar system of morality, etc. We don't think about it in detail. Why is it peculiar? What, you know? So this sort of thing, when you start to picking apart the ritual, you'll see the words they used are very carefully chosen words. You know, they're not casual. The first three Grand Masters, John de Saguier, Anthony Sayer, and George Payne, they spent 8 years rewriting the degrees and inventing a third degree. You know, that's a lot of time just to write three degrees. There's not much, you know, they're not very long, but that's how well they thought about it in depth. And so I like to also look at the degrees, look at the words that were chosen, and look behind the words and why they were saying this. What was the objective? Always,
it's as if they were leaving breadcrumbs for somebody
to discover.
It's like
that. It's like breadcrumbs, yes. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I wondered why busy men would want to rewrite the bylaws of a blue-collar workman's club. You know, it's if you were a professor or a doctor nowadays, would you go down to the docks and offer to rewrite the stevedores?
Rewrite the
bylaws. You know? Let's organize the stevedores.
Absolutely, it's true. It's like rewrite. It's like Prince Harry going to the local wheelwrights club and rewriting the laws there. Doesn't make any sense. Yeah. Unless,
and organizing them into a grand lodge. Why? What's the objective? There had to be an objective. And it wasn't to do. And when you look at, go back and look at the rituals before 1717, when the revival of Freemasonry started, you look at the older rituals, there's nothing in them, really. It's just nonsense, a lot of nonsense. There's just no overt secrecy. No secret words. There's no Kabbalah or anything like that in it. It's just looks like they were just having a good time, a bit of revelry, and initiating somebody, making it a little bit difficult for the guy, so he would remember it. And that's about it, I think.
On that topic, a good starting place is the constitutions. And there are quite a few different versions of the constitutions. Is there any one you would recommend in particular?
Well, I mean, the 1723 and the 1738, James Anderson's are the originals. Any other ones, including Washington's, is it Washington's? Yes.
I've got Franklin's as well. Franklin's, yes. Which is... It's a bit truncated. I would say try and find a London version, but you can find facsimile issues online.
And there were several published in Ireland, but they were just copies of the original, people trying to make money off them. So I think the original two are the place to start. And even those two constitutions, I mean, there's a lot of nonsense in them. You know, when you look at what they call the legend of Freemasonry. Taoism, there's this famous story that goes back, and it doesn't go back so far, it goes back to 1600s, but it's called the Shi Lu, the story of the barbarians, and it's the fall of the Shaolin temple, and the 13 monks or 18 monks that were heroes, you know, it's trying to protect the Ming emperor. This is a kind of a hero story for Taoism. So I think the Freemasons thought of the same things. We should have a glorious history as well. And They just added everybody. They added Julius Caesar as a past Grand Master. Even Jesus Christ was a past Grand Master. Mm-hmm. You know? I mean, Pythagoras. It just doesn't make sense, you know? And when you write things like that, people then say, well, the whole thing must be crazy, you know? But it's actually just bits of it, a little bit strange, you know? Mm-hmm. But
talking of that Shaolin legend, I'm sure my age now, but I do have a VHS adaptation from a kung fu movie of the 13 Monks of Shaolin.
Oh.
Shows you just how old I am. It's on VHS, not DVD.
Oh, well, yeah. So at least it wasn't Betamax.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, Betamax.
Celluloid.
Yeah. 8mm. Yeah. So, yeah. So I think if you want to research, one of the things you have to be careful of is a lot of Victorians kind of lay down the law. This is what Freemasonry is about. And it's all about geometry and morality and things like that. I think it's because Victorians themselves were a very moralistic society. They were a very bit prudish and they were strict. And this is how their interpretation was Freemasonry. But I think the original Freemasonry was much more spiritual and much more unique and interesting than we really understand.
And I think it's important for people to make a distinction between Victorian Freemasonry and the era that gave birth to Freemasonry. They're quite distinct.
Yes.
They are very different.
Right.
They weren't wearing suits in the first place.
Yeah.
They
were wearing so that's the era I was looking at from 1717 to 1740, 45. Mm-hmm. And simple things like the clothes, though, we can see pictures of them in Lodge, one dated 1813. And they were wearing, you know, colorful clothes. And the aprons weren't square. They were rounded, you know. And so I think the move, particularly in Europe and Britain, to wear dark clothes was introduced after the death of Prince Albert in 1861. Yes. And so I think the court, Victoria wore black, so the whole court wore black, and then it became a tradition for anyone, you know, if you don't follow the court, you know, if you don't follow the royalty and aristocracy, you're nobody. So I think everybody started to be where it's to wear black. And so you really have to look at the history, you know, surrounding Freemasonry to understand what was going on and what their objectives were.
Mm. And that's part of the journey.
Yes.
Well, thank you for that. That's some topics to get your teeth into. And that just about brings this episode to a close. And if you have any questions, please email on the link below. We now part on the square and we will meet soon. Thank you. And goodbye.
Goodbye.